Welcome to Your Highness Podcast. I'm your host, Diana Crash.
And I'm your co-host, J.R. Crash.
I'm glad to be with you again today, J.R. As we do with every episode, we're going to start this off with our recurring segment, Fave Pot, Fave Not Pot, where we'll both talk about our favorite cannabis and non-cannabis related item at the moment. So I'm going to start. My fave pot right now is actually a pre-roll that I got the chance to try. It's by THC Design, and it's called Crescendo. I guess that is the name of the strain.
Yeah.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
It apparently won Best Pre-Roll in California by Weed Maps in 2023. And LA Weekly and Farmers Cup. So I don't normally like straight sativa, but this one had very high limonene, myrcene, and caryophyllene content. Terpenes. Those are my favorite terpenes.
Those are my favorite terpenes. They're terpenes that are most dominant in indicas.
Yeah. So I very much enjoyed that, and I can't wait to try more. So what is your fave pot right now, JR?
My fave pot is it's a relief bomb by Savan Wellness. Fun fact about me, I'm old. So sometimes...
How is that fun?
Fun to some, I guess. But yeah, sometimes my body just hurts for random reasons. And the last time this happened, it was my neck. You know, I wrenched up my neck doing the very strenuous activity of sleeping. And it took me a while to actually find something that was actually kind of calming the muscles and relaxing my neck. And this bomb did an amazing job. So I'm going to have to go with Savan Wellness Relief Bomb as my favorite pot this week.
I really do love that bomb. I love that as well. And I like that it doesn't have an overpowering scent. It's like very...
Yeah, because that's actually important to me. I don't like heavy scents. Mm-hmm. And at first I didn't want to use it because I didn't want like that really heavily menthol smell. And it really didn't have that. It was quite nice.
Yeah, I agree. I as well like Savan. So anyway... My fave not pot right now is a little bit of a delayed response, but you know, I think that the world at large is still discussing this topic on some level. I think if you go on social media right now and look up Real Housewives of Salt Lake City, you'll find yourself going down a rabbit hole pretty quickly. So if you are a Bravo-holic like I am, then you're well aware. But if you're not, there was a finale of The Real Housewives of Salt Lake City that, like, changed the game of reality television, I would say. I think, like, going forward, everything will be different for reality television. I mean, I feel like it has to be. And, yeah, I can't really say much more than that if you're not into Bravo, other than to say that the way that this finale ended was, like... was like Gossip Girl and Mean Girls. And it was just like all of these things that hit on for people in my age group. It was like, wow, okay, that just happened. This isn't a really great description, but all I'm trying to say is that the finale was epic. And there were a lot of twists and turns, and they continued after the fact. And it's really interesting to see someone infiltrate a group like that. And then, like, caused that much chaos. It was pretty entertaining, and I was here for it.
Nice. I love it.
So what's your fave not pot right now?
My fave not pot is a movie. It's a movie we recently watched, and I'm going to tell you this movie, while both being an objectively not good movie, is also incredibly amazing, and it is called Vamps. Written and directed.
Incredibly amazing. I don't know about
that. Oh, it's incredibly amazing. It's written and directed by Amy Heckerling.
Which you might know from The Clueless.
From Clueless. And, all right, some bad aspects of it. I was about to tell you what this movie's about, and I can't because it just seems like multiple things happening, and that's just it. Yeah. And that's and we're okay with that. Also, the budget's not really there, and it looks like it was filmed in chronological order. So the longer the movie goes on, the less budget they have, to the point where at the end, like, the effects are just absolutely atrocious. But this is such campy, just fun, cheesy. It's just amazing. It has Alicia Silverstone, Kristen Ritter, both of them just absolutely slaying it. You have Sigourney Weaver just killing it like always. Justin Kirk, who you might know from Weeds, playing a Ukrainian vampire. Just top-notch entertainment right there. And then you have Malcolm McDowell playing Vlad Tempish, or Vlad the Impaler, who Dracula is based off of. He basically takes up knitting so that he doesn't kill people anymore. This is just some of the amazingness that you can expect with this movie.
I'm going to interject that it is the perfect movie to watch while smoking a pre-roll.
Yeah.
Or a bong or whatever. It's a great, like, get a little high, watch something stupid that also keeps you on the edge of your seat.
I mean, I wasn't on the edge of my seat, but I was loving it. I was loving every aspect.
Yeah, but you were on the edge of your seat because you didn't know what was going to happen next.
Yeah, and I was kind of like on the edge of my seat going like, why is this happening?
Yeah.
Because sometimes scenes happen just because.
Yeah.
And it's okay because I'm telling you, this movie has the potential of being a cult classic. I'm talking about like House of Yes level.
It's been on. It's been out for over 10 years.
Sometimes it takes a while. Sometimes it takes a while because people don't know about it. And I'm here to deliver it to them. If you like House of M, you know, some of those early Katie Holmes weird movies that don't seem to make sense, then you're going to love this. It doesn't really make sense, but it's an amazing movie. I recommend you watch it.
Oh, I mean, I wouldn't say amazing, but I'll let you go with that.
I rated it at an 8 on IMDb.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So you really liked it. All right. Well,
I enjoyed it very much so. Yeah.
I would say if you're a fan of Clueless and you watch True Blood, then this might be really up your alley.
Yeah. And also movies like House of Yes. Like, there's really, like, niche, like,
weird,
obscure, yeah, weird kind of movies that don't need to make sense but don't have to. Then, yeah, this is top-notch. Top-notch, campy entertainment.
All right. Well, I did watch it with you, so now you're making me think I didn't watch the same movie, but hey, you know what?
Oh, no, I know that you did. It takes, like, don't take my, like, don't go to this movie and be like, JR said this is amazing, it's going to be amazing, because I love really bad, weird movies.
Yeah, he does. and it's not on the same level of Clueless. Let's just be real about that. Like, yes, it has Alicia Silverstone in it, but, and it has some other characters from that movie you'll recognize, but that's about it. That's about as far as the connection goes.
But it's made, it seems like just a bunch of friends were hanging out one day and they were like, let's make a movie about vampires.
I think it's supposed to be a commentary on like how Hollywood treats aging actresses, honestly.
Well, yeah, there's that too. But when you have such a low budget, you can't help but just kind of have fun. Like the fact that everyone seemed like they were having so much fun making this movie really made it. If you had other actors in it just like playing parts, then this movie would have been atrocious. But like everyone literally seems like they're just having an absolute blast. Just a bunch of friends hanging out, making this really cheesy vampire movie. It's top notch.
Okay. So
nice awkward silence there.
I mean, you're saying top notch. You just keep taking it to the extreme. So I'm just like, I mean, I'll agree with you that it was entertaining. But
Oscar nominated vamps.
You want them to retroactively
give everyone Oscars.
Yeah. All right. So anyway, switching gears a bit, since we've been talking about this movie long enough to warrant some type of sponsorship. Amy Eckerling, you want to sponsor this podcast?
Hopefully more than you spent on the vamps movie.
Oh. So we are going to talk about something that continues to be a hot topic in the cannabis industry since we started. And actually, I feel like the conversation about this topic has changed a lot over the years, but we'll get to that in a minute. Let's just start with a question, JR. Since you hire people regularly in this space, what do you think of people who come and apply for a job who have absolutely no experience with cannabis. And I mean, like, they've never smoked it. They have no interest, but they still want to be in the industry.
This one I go back and forth on, really.
Yeah. I know.
Like an absolute champ. Because really my first thought is the why behind it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, why are you trying to get into this industry if you have zero care for it? Now, if someone just doesn't consume cannabis, but they have like a strong passion for maybe more natural alternatives to health or green health, then yes, that's very much like a, okay, you're fully on board, because cannabis really isn't necessarily for everyone. Even if you're a big proponent of green medicine, you know, cannabis itself in a lot of areas are lacking, and some people actually prefer alternatives, you know, to cannabis. So I'm completely fine with that, because some of those alternatives don't have necessarily shops available. But when it comes to an absolute disinterest, you know, you return back to that why factor of why would you want to be in an industry that you have zero interest in, knowing that, you know, a job takes about 60-70% of your life is mm-hmm. literally you working. You know, why would you
want to add more to that if you're a self-starter, entrepreneur, working for yourself, you know?
Exactly. So why would you want to get into this if you're going to be spending that portion of your life doing something that you don't really care about at all? Generally speaking, when I've hired people that have zero interest in cannabis, they only last like 5 months because a lot of the times it's just that they think it's going to be kind of easy to get into and kind of like an easy job to have. Or they're just kind of in between things that they are actually passionate about and we just so happen to be hiring. But it kind of goes along lines of like coffee. You know, if you don't really like coffee, why would you go be a barista knowing that you're just going to be smelling coffee all day? You know, the one perks of having the job is getting a discount on something that you're not even going to drink. It's not like you're getting paid all that well. So it's like, why are you doing this? You know, and this is actually something that goes beyond just a store level, you know, moving outside of the stores into accounting, you know, the ancillary aspects of this industry. You yet again fall back into that why aspect of it, even on a larger scale of things. You know, if you are, say, an accountant, and let's say you are a successful accountant, and you're working at a very nice accounting firm, you're making good money, why would you leave that to go into an industry that's still federally illegal to run? You know, we all have to basically work under umbrella corporations just to get paid.
Mm-hmm.
So why would you give up that stability to work in an industry that is illegal, that at any moment you could just, depending on who is in the federal government, no longer have a job or being able to get paid? You know, there's so many things that if you're not in love with the industry or have a very strong respect for the industry, you have to question why they're doing it. And that's why we end up, you know, having an industry filled with people that love it, but then also people that are coming in and instead of highlighting what they love about the product like a lot of people do, they want to change the industry into something that's more stereotypical that they're more comfortable with, mm-hmm. traditional retail, traditional what have you.
Right, yeah, because in the beginning, like when we started this show 7 years ago, I remember a lot of our guests were like, either I've never tried it or I've only tried it once and it wasn't for me. But they always had another, like, well, my family member, my mother had cancer. This is what saved her life. And like, at first I was like, okay, all right. Yeah, that's, I guess if you have like tangential, you know, you have some kind of connection, whether it be your family member or a pet or something like that. But that only goes so far, I feel, because like you said, there are so many hurdles in this industry. It is so difficult. And I'm not even technically in the industry, quote unquote, according to some people. It's like if you only write about it and talk about it, you're not really in it, according to some. But I've been seeing people talk about it on social media a lot recently. And I think that's because people who don't have any experience with the plant, who have never tried it, they have a hard time understanding the patient perspective, right? Like, to them, to someone who's never used cannabis before, it's like, well, why aren't you so excited that you have it available to you right now? Why are you complaining about every little thing? You know, that's like the gist, the general pushback that I see. And it's like, well, we're not complaining about every little thing. We have to be critical. We have to critique any type of progress to see if it's actually really progress or it's just being masqueraded as such and we're supposed to be excited about it, you know?
Yeah.
For example, the cost aspect of it, right? So if you've never used cannabis before, you don't know what a good price for a pack of pre-rolls is. What is a decent price? You might think, well, $55, I don't know, it seems reasonable. But for someone who's been using cannabis for a decade, who may have been purchasing it from the legacy market and getting it for like, what, half the price this whole time, and they're budgeting their medicine, you know, so they only have so much to spend on their medicine every week, that might really mess that person up, right?
Yeah.
And if you've never used cannabis, then you don't know why somebody needs to use it every week medicinally.
Yeah.
And you might not even really care that they can't afford it because you think it's available. Like, I don't know, maybe do a better job budgeting or something.
Yeah. And just, I mean, just going off of just hard facts of this industry, you know, for one, if you have someone coming in, getting their foot into the door in a retail space, being a bud tender, and they have zero interest in consuming cannabis, nor ever have. They're not understanding the patient's aspect of it. Sometimes patients are coming in because they are purchasing their medicine, so they're not going to be super happy all the time. Mm-hmm. So that's something that we hear a lot. Like, why is this person coming in grumpy? They're buying weed. It's like, well, they're buying weed most likely because they're probably in a lot of pain right now.
Yeah. They're desperate for relief.
Yeah, so they're trying to come in to get their medicine so they're not feeling that way. So they're not going to be coming in doing backflips and high-fiving people for legal cannabis. They're just trying to come in and get their medicine. You don't see people
going to the pharmacy,
skateboarding in the CVS, yeah, slapping high fibers all around. You know, that's not what's happening. And it's not going to happen in dispensaries. People are coming in to get their medicine. And then you have to look at what the people working actually go through. Taxes for cannabis companies are astronomically high, the taxes that they have to pay on each and every employee. So that means in order to be able to stay afloat, they have to hire less people to do more work than in traditional retail. So if I'm working at, you know, Retail Zo Plaza or wherever, I don't want to name any specific store or whatnot, and I have five people to do one zone, in a cannabis space, I got about two people to do that same amount of work that traditional retail will have five.
Can you explain that for us a little bit?
Well, the companies have to pay taxes on each and every employee.
Right.
So generally speaking, you know, in cannabis, it's almost double, you know, what they have to spend because of legislation and the federal government and the fact that it's Schedule One. We don't have any good safe banking measures in place right now. Exactly. So they have to spend a lot of money per individual employee than traditional retail. They work off of a labor percentage, which means that for, you know, every hour that someone's worked, X amount is sold and it delivers a labor percentage. Generally speaking, in traditional retail, you're looking at 15%, which means that 15% of your net sales of that day is allocated to payroll and paying the people that were working that day. In traditional retail, like I said, it's 15%. In cannabis, you're looking at around 5-6%. So that means that out of everything that you sell that day, they can only afford to allocate, instead of 15%, around 5-6% to payroll in order to even keep the business afloat. So they have to hire less people. So the people that are working, they have to be passionate about their job because it is hard work. I can't express enough how hard it can be working in a dispensary. A lot of people, because they watch Netflix shows or whatnot, they think we're all just having fun, freaking listening to Pink Floyd, getting high, talking about philosophy, periodically having people come in and having long conversations about, you know, origins of cannabis and strains and stuff like that. That's not true. It's very fast paced. It's very chaotic. It can be very stressful. You're dealing with a lot of people that aren't in their best self because they're coming to get their medicine. It can be very taxing. So you really have to have a love for either the plant or the industry or just the broadness of green medicine and natural healing just to kind of get through. And it's not, you're not going to find that for someone who has a passion in, you know, pastries,
right,
and not cannabis. They're going to get burnt out so quick.
Look, former hairstylist here. Yeah, exactly. I've worked a lot of jobs where people have said, oh, you love to do this? You should do this. And let me tell you, that does not translate. It does not translate. I do not care what you have to say about if you love what you do, you never work a day in your life. That is BS because every job is hard, even if you love it so much. But like when I was working in a salon, I got to the point where it was just done. I was over it. I could not do it anymore. I was just done. But cannabis, I keep going, even though I don't work in nearly as stressful situation as you do. But I mean, really, this has changed my life and I've seen it change so many other people's lives. And I do think that we should all have access, unfettered access to it. And that's what keeps me going. But there are a lot of days where I'm just like, what are we doing? Mm-hmm. What are we even doing? I mean, especially you, because you deal with like
there's a lot more than I do. But it gets exhausting. You can kind of feel trapped because another thing that a lot of people don't mention about, if you spend 3 years in the cannabis industry and you want to get out of it, it can be very difficult because there's a lot of industries that don't take those 3 previous years of the cannabis industry as serious as it actually is. So there's a lot of daunting aspects to getting into the cannabis industry. So you really do have to love it. And if you're not going to love it.
Try it once.
Yeah, exactly. And see if it's something that you want to spend 60 to 70% of your year talking about and working with, you know, because it's going to show. It's going to show not just on a level at the stores, but if you are in one of the ancillary aspects or in the C-suite, you know, and you have zero experience in this, then it's going to show from the top down, and it's not going to be successful for anybody.
Right, because, like, look, I've been a cannabis user for a long time, like more than I haven't been throughout my life, right? And honestly, it wasn't until I read Jack Harer's book that like all the light bulbs went off in my head about the potentials of this plant, like how it can literally save the planet if we allow the things to happen that need to happen for that to be the case. But, you know, but the potential, I mean, we can replace so many things with hemp and cannabis. And, you know, and once I had that moment, that's when I was like, oh, I cannot stop talking about this. I cannot stop wanting to talk about this, you know?
And I think that's the thing, too. It's not necessarily even the consumption level, is the appreciation for it. Because I've had people that heavily consume come and work and it doesn't work out because they just care about consuming. Mm-hmm. It's the appreciation of the plant. I personally don't heavily consume. Right. I don't even touch THC until the sun is down. I'm in my comfy pants. I'm relaxed.
Yeah, we're not a stoner couple by all traditional means.
Exactly. So I don't want to give like the wrong impression. I very much consume on a very light basis. But it's the appreciation. It's seeing what it can do, how it can help people, and wanting to be a part of that, and also understanding the benefit of it, and also some of the side effects of it too, because these are things you have to know, the good and the bad, in order to be able to really embrace it. And if you're not willing to do that, I don't care how much you consume, if you're not willing to really put your whole self into what this plant can do and what all plants can do, then I'm not saying go somewhere else. I'm just saying that you're going to end up burning yourself out.
Yeah.
And you don't want to, and that's not going to benefit anybody. You know, just know what you're getting into.
Take those rose-colored glasses off.
Exactly.
Because it's so easy to have them on when you get into this industry. It is, I mean, I don't know about right now. I don't know about right now. Maybe if you're getting into the industry right now at this very moment, you might not have those, you know, rosy expectations.
Yeah.
But But, you know, I don't know. Maybe you do. It depends on where you live, because that's the other part of it. It's so different.
Yeah.
So, I mean, and it changes depending on where you live, because not everyone can consume safely. So we want to add that. But, you know, if you can't consume THC, at least understand CBD. Try to whatever you can get your hands on safely.
Or other alternatives in plant medicine.
Yeah,
kava, exactly. Mm-hmm. Kratom, mm-hmm. functional mushrooms.
Yeah.
All things that are legally obtainable that you mm-hmm. can try that have amazing benefit. Like I said, you don't have to just have a love solely for cannabis, mm-hmm. but a love and appreciation for plant medicine as a whole.
Yeah. Safer, healthier alternatives.
That's right.
And so that's pretty much all we have to say about it today. But stay tuned for our local look with Ishelle, who is the CEO of Mujeres Valley Campground and Fairgrounds. And she's going to talk about New Mexico and how things are, speaking of, you know, we're talking about how it's different locationally. And is that even a word, locationally?
Sure it is. Yeah.
Anyway, it's a very interesting discussion about New Mexico and what she's doing there. So stay tuned for that. And until next time, stay high and beautiful. Ever feel like life's stress gets to be too much? Welcome to Mitra Gaia, your natural wellness partner. We are the number one rated provider of Kratom, a 100% natural plant-based solution used in Asia for centuries to help increase focus, energy, and relaxation. Want to know more? Use the code YHPOD to get 10% off your first order today. That's mitragaya.com and code YHPOD for 10% off. And now we're talking to Ishelle Mooney of Mujeres Valley Campgrounds. How are you doing today, Ishelle?
I'm doing good. Thank you, Diana. I appreciate you for bringing me on the segment.
I appreciate you for joining me, especially with everything you have going on right now. So let's start by taking a snapshot of the New Mexico cannabis scene, because we don't really hear anything about that. I mean, I say we, I'm saying like I'm being broad here, but I mean, I don't really hear much about the New Mexico scene. So, can you give us a little bit of background about like the current attitude among consumers? And I know that being a business owner, it can be a little bit of a two-part question, because they're probably two different viewpoints, but you know, start wherever you'd like to.
Okay, cool. So the New Mexico cannabis scene, it is fairly new as far as recreational goes. I've been here for about 7 years, so I know when I got here in 2017 there was a medical program. As a medical patient, I was a medical patient in California, Colorado, and now New Mexico, so I know like the medical side of it, which is very similar across states that I've been in. But the recreational side, I think, is a little bit more complex for a couple of reasons. New Mexico is not a very, how can I say it? Like, we're not a state that has a lot of money. And a lot of people move out here because it's cheap to live. We have low taxes and things like that. But when it comes to cannabis and like recreational, medical, and the natural market, it's such a huge clash of people and information and belief systems that it's kind of hard to get us all on the same page. And unfortunately, the New Mexico cannabis scene is real clicky, because New Mexico is clicky in general. So if you're like not from New Mexico, you don't get like a lot of people that are like, yeah, we want to support you and what you're doing. And you kind of got to fit in where you can get in, you know, regardless of how much you want to help the industry or anything like that. If they're not very open, because there's not a lot of money to go around. So it's been interesting to see, like, just like any other state that recreationalizes, a lot of people open up, a lot of dispensaries open, the big cities are saturated with all these dispensaries. And then we come in from out of town, we live 2 hours away, we come in from out of town to these super saturated markets, and all the empty lots and all the parking lots are empty. You know what I mean? Like, there's nobody, there's no customers there. And it's just, it's really cutthroat right now because of that, because we don't have a ton of people that have a lot of extra money to spend on cannabis. The recreational prices are so expensive. So a lot of people stay medical and go to the medical dispensaries because they can't afford the taxes or, you know, things like that. And then where we live at, which is Western New Mexico, there's really nothing here. So there's maybe like two areas that are kind of like big cities. And other than that, there's a lot of people that need it medically and would like to access it recreationally, but they have to drive 2 hours to get it. So it's just really expansive and different everywhere you go.
Wow. I don't know that I would be consuming if I had to go 2 hours.
Oh, it's crazy. Like that, which is sad because they promised, like I was part of the working medical cannabis working group that kind of opened the door for recreational. And that was a huge thing that a lot of medical patients were concerned about. And that was something that the state promised to keep, was that medical patients could grow their own cannabis. And we all know how that goes a couple months into legalization, and that went right out the window. So it's kind of hard, you know, because you know that there's people that absolutely cannot afford the drive. They can barely afford to buy their medicine. And here you are taking away their grow rights. So, and that's really unfortunate. It's been really unfortunate in the legalization process.
I guess that's why we're not hearing about it a lot. So what would you, I mean, you already kind of got into it, but like how has, I know you're newer to the area, but like what has been the scene over the last several years? Like how has it developed?
So what I've noticed is that a lot of people that are able to come into the recreational cannabis industry are people that are from out of state. Cookies, big brands like that, people that are already set up in other states or have locations in other states, those are the ones that are coming into New Mexico and able to make the money because they have the money to spend to get set up. And then I see, you know, local people that have always been a part of the community trying to get into the cannabis scene and they can't afford it. And they're going out to people outside of the state looking for funding. So it's really hard. I can say that me and my husband have been, you know, our goal was to, as soon as it opened, we were going to put in our license and we were going to open a dispensary out here. And that wasn't able to happen because of, it's cheap. Like I'll say that it's cheap. They made, you know, like, I think it's like $500 for, you know, one of the licenses. So that's very inexpensive compared to other states. But at the same time, it's like, right, but then we have to drive 4 hours to go get a live scan, and we have a ranch, we don't have anybody to watch it. So it's like a lot of moving parts that costs money, and it's not really geared toward servicing New Mexico. Like, yes, they want the taxes from it, but they could care less about who comes in, because that was one of the other things that they promised as well, was that they were going to keep the industry closed off to people from out of state until the in-state applicants were able to get set up. And a couple months in, that flew right out the window because New Mexico just wants the money because they need the money. So it's kind of like a like lose-lose, like New Mexico needs the money, the people don't have it. You know what I mean? It's just like, it's a hard place to be in, honestly.
That's rough. That is really rough. So what do you wish the people outside of New Mexico could understand besides the affordability aspect, like what about the scene? What are some of the good things, maybe?
It's not that there's no good things. Yeah. I mean, we definitely have some really great cultivators out here. My husband is one of them. But I would really love to see people support more Indigenous and Black-owned businesses, because we're the ones who take the hit. You know what I mean? Like, we're not all, New Mexico's not all up to date with the marketing tactics. So that's also where we kind of struggle at. We're like trying to teach people like, hey, you got to put yourself out there. You got to market. Here's different ways to get the word out. You know, like we're trying to bring in people like writers from other states to get, you know, exposure and everything. But just be patient with New Mexicans. That's what I would tell people about the New Mexico cannabis scene. Like, they're a little rough around the edges is because they live a rough life out here, and we don't have a lot of advocacy for cannabis, because even within the reservations and as many different tribes and pueblos that we have out here, it's very different between all of them on how, where they fall when it comes to cannabis in their belief system. So it's you just got to flow with it. Whoever you meet is not going to be the same belief system as, you know, whoever else you meet, or, you know, one tribe may be advocating for them to grow cannabis. Another one's like, heck no, we don't want that on our land. Like, just be open to learning about all the different things that the New Mexico scene has to offer.
Well, to that point, what do you hope for the future of New Mexico?
I really hope that we could get it to a point where it's, I'm going to say it, and I know it's going to sound funny to most people, where it's actually treated like alcohol, because that is the one thing that's missing across all of the states that have recreationalized, is that all of these states say, hey, we want it to be treated like alcohol, but we don't get treated like that. You know what I mean? Like, events have all these extra requirements that they don't have for alcohol. And so that's what I would like to see. I would like to see the government side of it come to terms in a good way, like mesh in a good way with the actual community side of it, and see that they need to work with us a little bit more. But it's not very different from many other states. You know, it's the same way in Colorado. When we left, it was like that too. And same thing with California when we left. It's like, it's constantly changing. New people come in and out of government positions, and, you know, stuff gets revisited, stuff gets changed again. So I would just hope that we continue to build on to what we're doing, and we don't move backwards away from it, because there's still places that you go in New Mexico and they're like, oh, that's, you know, the devil's weed or whatever, you know, like, it's still very much like Wild West in some places out here, and they're just like not accepting to it at all. So I know that with that comes education, and that's what I hope to see people focus more on in the cannabis industry, is educating each other, not just about their own strains or where they came from, but like the history of cannabis, you know, like cannabis goes back.
More of a global picture, like a bigger picture, looking at the whole thing, all of it.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Exactly. And I think once we get to a place where we're open to talking about that and being able to put aside like our differences in belief systems and just listen to each other across the board in the cannabis industry, I think we would be a lot better off.
Yes, I agree. And you're doing a lot of work in that regard. So tell us about the campgrounds and some of the programs you have offering, and, you know, things you have coming up, because I know there's a lot, but give us a highlight reel, if you will.
Yeah. So the campground is pretty much a portion of our land. So when we came out from Colorado, we didn't know where we were going. We asked Spirit to guide us to where we needed to be to do the work that needed to be done. And this is where we ended up. We have a total of 63 acres in the same area, so we have 4 lots. We decided that...
I can't even envision 63 acres. Like, my head just can only, like, maybe think of 6. Like, I was just like, 63. Whoa.
What I've done is I've tried to compare it to theme parks. So, like, I came from California. It's bigger than Six Flags.
Whoa. Oh, my gosh. Wow.
Right. I thought the same thing too, because we had never seen more than a couple of acres at a time. So we haven't even walked all of it yet. I'll
say that. I can imagine. I mean, you might get lost. But anyway, sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off. It's just like, that's such an enormous amount of land. It's hard for me to, like, my brain's like, wait a minute. You have questions about that.
No worries at all. So we came, we noticed that there were no people of color in the area, even though this is indigenous land originally. So our thing was, like, we were scared to come out. I know I was scared. I was like, I don't know how much gas we're going to have. How far are we going to drive? Where's the next gas station? Because none of that is advertised for this area. So that's one of our things that we've been trying to do, is we set aside 20 acres of our 63 acres to be a campground/fairground. Our goal is to build it up sustainably. So we don't want to be some like fancy, ritzy campground where everything's cemented over, and you know, we don't want to do that. We want to come in and work in harmony with nature and try to make the smallest amount of a footprint that we can make. So there's no electricity, it's totally off grid. We have water, but it comes from our homestead pretty much, or we collect it. And so that's kind of like our goal with it, is to create a safe space for people of color and for allies to come and enjoy nature and be like, I know that's one place I can go where I know I'll be safe when I get there. I know people that know me, or, you know, that know my struggle and what I deal with coming out to a place like this, and they can feel comfortable doing that. So that was our main goal with the land. Then we realized people were like, we wanted to open it up so people can come host events here. And then we get like, well, are there bathrooms? Do you have running water? Are there lights? Is there a stage? Is that, you know what I mean? And so we're like, dang. So we had to show people how to host events here, that you can use this land to host events. So that's where our festivals came in. And what we do is we do two festivals a year. We do one in May, and then we do one in August. And that's really just our way to showcase what can be done with the land. Like, you can have huge weddings out here, retreats, company retreats, private parties, like all kinds of stuff. My husband pretty much built the stage by hand from the materials on the campground. So again, tying into the sustainability, you know, using the materials that we have instead of importing stuff from Home Depot or something. And then with that, we hope to be able to show people, hey, this is how you can host your own event here. And we struggle with that a lot, because we get a lot of people like, hey, you guys should do this type of event, or you guys should do this type of a retreat. And like, we would love to, but we're only two people doing all of this. So our comeback to people is always like, you should come and do it here. You know? That is the goal, for other people to come host your events here, make your money, you know, connect with your communities, and then, you know, do it again or whatever. But our goal is pretty much to like build up the land. So we have one of the big things that we have projected is behind the stage that we built is a natural drainage area. Wow. All of the water from the mountain drains down through our land in front of the stage to behind the stage. So we're planning on making a lake so we can have lakeside camping, so we can bring back, this area used to be full of redwoods. Now there's not a single redwood in sight. So we're just, you know, we want to help revive the area of plants and trees that used to be here, while also opening up spaces so that people can feel comfortable to come and have a big private party or get married out here. I'm licensed to be able to do weddings. So, you know, I'm able to do weddings on site. We can do cannabis weddings.
What don't you do?
We try everything. I even do skincare. So we do a lot.
Yeah.
I'll say it that way. We do a lot.
It's like full service.
Yes.
And I believe a friend of the pod, V, will be there at the next Freedom Fest, right? Or it's Freedom Festival. Yeah. Did I say that right?
Yes, yeah, it's the Freedom Fest. So we started it out with the Ganja Freedom Fest. We ran into some issues with the name and being able to market and advertise, so we dropped the Ganja.
Smart. But
we have the Freedom Fest in May, and then we have the Forest Fiesta in August. So the Forest Fiesta is more geared toward, obviously, we still allow plant medicine and everything like that, but it's more focused toward education. We focus on having more speakers in the cannabis and other industries, because we also have a lot of people that are into like the psychedelic healing and stuff like that that are involved in the Freedom Fest. Mm-hmm. So a lot of times when people come back, they come in May for the party, and then they come in August for the education and the community, the heat. It gets up to like 100 degrees up here. Sometimes it's really hot up here in summer.
I was going to say that would be a good birthday trip, but I don't know if it's that hot. I don't know if I can handle it. My birthday's in August.
Oh, August what? My husband is August 4th.
11th.
Oh, okay. Yeah. So I love that. Yeah, no, if you could make it, that would be cool. Because like you said, for the Freedom Fest, we pretty much set up a whole lineup of female judges. And part of the reason for that is because the name Mujeres means women. Mm. Actual name of the area is Cerro de las Mujeres, which means hill of women.
Wow. And I love that.
The mountain actually looks like a woman laying on her back. and it's like just her face. It looks like an indigenous woman laying on her back. So we've been trying to get a lot of female performers out here, but we're having a really hard time doing it. So our workaround was like, let's just make the Canna Cup all female judges. So that's what we did this year. We have Thunder Walker and then Adelia from Event High will be coming out, and they'll be the guest judges for the Canna Cup. And that was kind of our way to kind of like balance it, because the performers are so male dominated. That we really wanted to do what we could to make it more inviting to women. And even to the extent of like asking women that had attended before, like, hey, what could we do to make it more friendly for you? And we got feedback like, you know, it's kind of dark at night, it makes me nervous to walk to the bathrooms. And so we're like, every year we try to improve so that people feel comfortable, whether you're a woman, whether you're BIPOC, whether you're not BIPOC, you know what I mean? We've had that as well. Like, we get questions like, oh, well, am I welcome because I'm white? It's like, well, yes, of course you're welcome. And then it opens the door for more conversations, because realistically, I'm 48% European. So I may be BIPOC, but I'm a pretty good mix of BIPOC and Indigenous blood. So we're never closed off to, you know, people just because they're white or because they're not Black and brown or whatever. But we need to create spaces to where we can all be together to be able to have those conversations.
Right. Right. Absolutely. So how can people support you?
Definitely by coming to one of the festivals. But if not, we're open year round for camping, winter, spring, summer, fall, everything. So if you want to, you know, plan a trip out, that would be a great way. We try to keep our costs low, so that way people understand that we understand that you're driving really far to come support us, and we're not trying to like gouge you. So, we've had a couple of people like, hey, you know, you can up your prices to like $40, $50 a night. And I'm like, yeah, I don't want to do that though, because I know how it is to be a person of color spending $50 a night and another $50 to drive there. So just, you know, trying to be mindful of people's expenses. And any way you can get involved with the festivals, we have vendor positions, we have performer positions, we have volunteer positions, which means you can come and we'll actually pay you $50 to help us for the weekend.
Wow.
Plus give you perks. And then we also have like donors, like different donor levels. So our donor levels start at $50. If, you know, you absolutely can't afford $1,000 donorship, that's totally fine. $50 and that'll list you as a donor. And then just getting involved, spreading the word, honestly, even if it's just sharing our posts when you see it, that's such a huge help that people don't all the way realize. Sometimes it's really hard for us to get the word out. Like I said, we're only a team of two. We have one or two people helping us like virtually, but when it comes to building, my husband does all of that on his own. One of the other things too, that is like a great way to help if somebody's involved in getting like interested in getting involved with our nonprofit, we have the Indigenous Cannabis Council, which is pretty much founded by us. And our goal with that is to just monitor and create spaces for people of color in the cannabis industry. So we have all different types of positions. We need, you know, marketing people, clerical people, like pretty much anything you can think of. We're pretty much starting from the ground up. So if you're interested in being part of a nonprofit and helping out that way, that's also a huge support that we need as well.
That's amazing. And I'll make sure that we link to that in the show notes. So thank you so much. And I can't wait to have you back on to talk more about the campgrounds and everything else.
Thank you, Diana. I appreciate you for having me on today.
Thank you.
This episode of Your Highness Podcast is brought to you by MitraGaya.com. MitraGaya.com is giving listeners a 10% off discount when they use the code YHPOD. That's YHPOD at MitraGaya.com, a top-rated Kratom company. Also, you can keep up on the recent events and all the news surrounding our show by subscribing to our Substack, Your Highness Newsletter. This episode was edited and produced by James Crash and myself, Diana Crash, and is a production of Your Highness Media. Intro music is brought to you by Your Mom Likes My Music. Thank you for listening.